Today on The Grave Talks, Ghosts on Your Shelf. Part two of our conversation about haunted objects with author Christopher Balzano. And we've talked about dolls, but there's one doll in particular that I want to talk to you about, a specific doll. We did an episode a while back about Robert the Doll.
Yeah.
And you're in Florida. Robert the Doll's in Florida, down in Key West. And the chapter on that says Chris's own experience with the world's most haunted doll.
Yes.
So I'd like you to talk about that.
I had no idea who Robert was. And I love Robert because kind of the same thing we were talking about with Bloody Mary in terms of whatever is really popular in the paranormal tends to attach itself to Bloody Mary. It's the same way about Robert. The story of Robert and the backstory of him has changed so much. He right now, for three, four generations, he was the most haunted doll in the world, I would say. Then Annabelle came and kind of took all his thunder. And so Robert had to reinvent himself. So now there are all these other legends. It's this doll in Key West, for those who don't know or haven't listened to your other episode, where essentially, depending on what part of the story you believe, this man named Robert Eugene Otto got this doll. He immediately stripped himself of his name and he named the doll Robert, and he refused to be called Robert anymore. He was Gene or Eugene. The doll was Robert, and he became obsessed with this doll, and he would take it everywhere with him. He would walk around the house with it. He, you know, had an honored place, both in his bedroom and then like at mealtimes and things like that. And all of a sudden, little things started to go wrong in the house, right? There would be things that were missing or things would fall. And the parents would say, well, who did that? And he always would say, Robert did it. So Gene was constantly saying, Robert did it, Robert did it. And if you go to Key West to this day, there's all these signs that say Robert did it. You can buy anything. I have a coffee mug that says Robert did it. I have a button that says it. I have a t-shirt, right? It's like a huge business down there. Well, then things kind of intensified. Now all of a sudden fires were being started. And they would say, who started this fire? What's going on? And he would always say, Robert did it. And he was always far enough away from whatever was happening, Gene was, that it made sense that there was something going on with this doll. Now, traditionally, all through the years that I've been doing the story until recently, the backstory was that his grandfather had gotten him the doll, but there was a housekeeper who was having an affair with Gene's father. And when they broke it off, she put a voodoo spell on the doll. And that's what made all this stuff happen. Well, as Robert gets older, they have to start like putting the doll away because kids are, you know, people are talking in the streets of Key West. Key West is a strange place, but a 14-year-old walking the streets holding, you know, a huge, you know, 3-foot doll is kind of weird.
Right.
And so they put it up in the attic. And as soon as they put it up in the attic, they would hear this scurrying across the attic floor as if something was up there. People, and I have actually talked to people who go, yeah, I remember we would walk by the streets, we'd look up, and there would be Robert staring down at the window from us, even though no one was in the attic and no one had been in the attic. You know, it kind of, the story escalates. He goes away for college. He comes back with a wife. The wife demands that he puts the doll away because as soon as he gets home, he wants to take the doll out, and the doll's kind of interfering with their life. And this same kind of stuff happens. And now it is in this, you know, it's in a museum. And you know, you go, if you go to the museum to visit Robert, you have to follow Robert's rules. The first one is you have to say hello to him when you come in. You have to ask him to take a picture or else the picture won't come out. You then have to thank him for taking the picture. You have to be polite. You can't be disparaging or make fun of him while you're there. And then lastly, you have to say goodbye when you leave. And when you go to the museum and you hear these rules, it's kind of fun and funny and like, oh, wow. You know, yet people strongly believe that these are real because behind Robert, where he is now in the museum, is covered with letters from people who believe they were cursed because they didn't treat Robert the right way. So there are all these apology letters like, Robert, I am so sorry. I didn't respect you. I made fun of the fact that you were a haunted doll. As soon as I left, I got into a car accident, you know, or I got a flat tire and missed my flight, or I got back to the hotel and everything was stolen, right? Of all these people who legitimately feel that because they didn't respect Robert, they had now have a curse on them. And so they have to write a letter to apologize and hope that Robert forgives him. So I've had a few run-ins with the doll, right? So as far as I know, he's only been out of Key West once. And he was brought to the Ghost Hunters TV show sponsored this huge, it's now kind of infamous conference in St. Pete, Florida. And they brought the doll with them. And not knowing who Robert was at all, being new to Florida, you know, all day long, people kept asking me to take pictures. And then they would laugh hysterically and say, okay, now ask to take the picture. Until finally I got the deal with what the actual story was, right, behind this doll. And then at the end of the day, they took the doll out of the case and they walked around with it. And everyone was chanting his name, Robert, Robert. And it was like this whole really weird kind of like almost trance-like thing of all these people worshiping Robert. And then he went away. Well, I don't think this is in the book because I could like there's some trouble stuff here with this. But the person who was running that conference ended up at that conference doing some pretty sketchy things and getting in trouble and being arrested, or at least being indicted. For some things like fraud and stuff like that. And because that person like was in trouble at the time, his publisher dropped him and I was asked to write the book that that person was supposed to write.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. And so I've always been very thankful to Robert because that was a successful book, right? Yet I always, you know, I always jokingly say I've loved two women in my life. And I lost both of them after I visited Robert. So I've been down to Key West twice. Both times I had run-ins with Robert. And both times almost immediately afterwards, I ended up getting a divorce from my wife a year later. And then, you know, losing my girlfriend, who I loved very much, when her and I went down and we kind of did some sketchy Robert things. So, you know, Robert gave me a book and then took love away from me.
Now, especially with the second case with your girlfriend.
Yes.
Did
which
you
I don't think
know
is in the
better?
Book because that's fairly recent. So.
So did you know better and not follow the Robert rules?
So the deal is I didn't actually see Robert.
Okay.
So we went down to Key West for something totally unconnected. It was like a business fun trip, like a reward business trip. And her and I had just started my podcast, which is called Tripping on Legends. And so we're down in Key West, and if you're us or pretty much anyone else, you don't go down to Key West unless you're looking for some ghosts too. You know what I'm saying? Like it's impossible to avoid the cool ghostly legends that are down there. And so I had already done Robert, so you know I was kind of focusing on the haunted lighthouse and the lighthouse buildings down there. And she was like, well, we've got to go see Robert. And I'm like, I'm not paying for the tour and all that stuff like that, I've already done it. And she's like, well, Robert's house is right there. And so we went to the Otto house, which is now called the Artist's House. And we talked our way in and we pretended that we were getting married and we wanted to use this bed and breakfast for our reception. And that warmed the guy up. And after about an hour and a half of talking, he finally let us go into the attic where Robert had been kept all of those years. And nothing paranormal happened, right? We were the first people who were not part of a TV show to be in that or connected to the business to be in that attic, you know, in decades. And so I always feel like, oh, I lied to get in there. I went to the house instead of going to see Robert. So somehow he's pissed off at me. But like, that's how curses work, right? Like bad stuff happens and then we make this connection. If there's an object that's related, like whether it's Robert the doll or, you know, that, I brought that hat you know, that old army hat in, and since then all these bad things have been happening, you automatically make that link. So rather than put any blame on myself for being a bad husband and a bad boyfriend, I'm going to blame Robert.
Because I was going to ask you, with all that said about Robert, do you feel that he is a haunted doll, or is it kind of the legends? Because when I talk to them about him, they've had lots of people come back and apologize to Robert in person. And we were talking about all the letters and everything. So there's a lot of people who truly do believe that.
Yeah.
What do you think? Where do you fall on it? I mean, I think with your history, you almost have to say, yes, I believe it. I'm sorry, Robert, if I offended you.
No, 100% I don't. I mean, I'm on the exact opposite part of that. You know, I think that Robert is a really good example of stories from the past that rationalize stories that are happening right now, right? So it's interesting. There's always this huge gap in the story, and there was never any malicious stories. So if you look at the original Robert stories, they're all about him, and they're all about Gene being obsessed, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So if you want to say to me, could he create like some kind of tulpa? Like, could he somehow, I don't believe the story about the voodoo witch, but I do believe that he could become so obsessed that a little bit of himself jumps in, right? Almost like a little bit of a Horcrux action going on here. And then that doll becomes the focus of his energy and the focus of his obsession and takes on a life of its own. Okay. In the original story, so if you go back and you read books that were not published within the last 20 years, there's nothing mean about Robert at all, right? There's no stories attached to it that he tried to kill somebody. There's no stories that he, like, even the fire stories didn't start to come out until probably about 20 years ago. The old stories about Robert just talked about this doll that would appear out of nowhere, that was kind of mischievous, but never anything bad, right? Now the doll becomes an attraction. Right? It becomes a draw to the museum.
And a moneymaker.
All of a sudden, there's a curse attached to it.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, there's a voodoo witch who put the thing on. Now, all of a sudden, Annabelle becomes ridiculously famous, right? A new company takes over Robert the Doll. I don't know how long ago your interview was. A new company takes over. And now, it's not only is it a voodoo priestess, but her and Mr. Otto had a child together, and he let that child die. And it's the child's, it's the spirit of his illegitimate child that's in the doll, Robert.
Oh.
And that's the story that they tell now, right? And so what you do is you start, you shift the legend, and it makes sense because it's Robert the Doll. You know it's haunted. Everyone knows about it, right? And then what happens is you ask a whole bunch of people on a tour in the dark to go in and start taking pictures. And I actually talk about this in the book, right? And so they start snapping pictures, and they're all nervous, excited, and they're literally taking pictures of something that's in plexiglass, right? Guess what? Guess what happens on old traditional, like, you know, digital cameras when you try to take a picture of something that's encased in glass?
Right, there's going to be tons of reflections.
Exactly, right? And then what happens is you calm yourself down, you ask Robert, you focus on taking the picture more, and now your pictures are coming out, right? And then you give a whole bunch of people, if you're in Key West, the odds that you have been drinking that day are pretty high, right? You give them dowsing rods, and all of a sudden the dowsing rods are flying all over the place, right? And then you give a whole bunch of people who are not trained, have maybe seen a paranormal show, right? You give them EMF meters, like K2 meters, and they're throwing them all over the place, wondering why the lights are going crazy on the machine, not even realizing what the machine does or how to use it, right? Nowadays, you go in there and you get a spirit box. So notice how all of the popular paranormal things are running through Robert's little house, right? Now people are giving spirit boxes. And on a clear day, guess how many countries radio receive things you can receive on something in Key West? All of a sudden you start
exactly
getting these things that are coming over, right? And so, you know, I really think it's one of those things where the tail is wagging the dog. I think there was probably something originally to the story, and I think a lot of people have made a lot of money on these newer things that are happening, which are nothing like the original story.
So do you think, and could there be a combination of both? The item itself is haunted, or is there something haunting the item? You know what I'm saying?
You're talking in general?
Yeah.
I think both things happen, and each story is unique, right? So I have a story in the book about a medal. And this medal, I don't think itself is haunted, right? I mean, I don't think it was created haunted. I don't think it was, but this medal, essentially what happened was a woman, her father, she was very close to her father. Her father had the medal. Her father dies. She then gives the medal to her newborn son, right? It's his medal now. And unfortunately, he dies in childhood. And this medal comes and goes when she needs it. Right. And sometimes it's her father who brings her the medal and she can feel her father's energy. And other times she'll go to her son's grave and she hasn't been able to she hasn't seen the medal in months. And all of a sudden she'll go to her son's grave and it'll be on her son's grave. And so that's 100% an object that is haunted specifically because it connects to her from the people who are trying to continuously communicate with her. The object itself is irrelevant except for the fact that she is drawn to it, right? It's kind of like it's the secret code of her in communication with especially her father, right? And to help her with the grief of her son. Other cases, you know, once again, not in the book, but when Tim and I were when we first published it, there was a production company that wanted to make a TV show of him and I. And we would basically run around the country looking for haunted objects. And one of the stories that we did that day was about this man who became obsessed with this chair. And for months, he would walk by this chair and see it for sale in the window. And he kept saving up his money and every day hoping that it wasn't there. And he finally bought it. And all of this crazy stuff started to happen. He started to hear voices and he started to see ghosts around it. And, you know, he became obsessed with sitting in the chair and he stopped going to work, you know, spending all of his time in the chair. And when we went and we looked at the chair, we were kind of getting into this whole story. He wouldn't even come into the storage where he had kept it. And yet we kept looking and he would be in the corner just like creeping, you know, around the wall looking to see the chair. Like he needed to continue to see it. It was very much like Gollum, right? Like my precious, you know?
It sounds like that.
Yeah. And there was you know, we've got two cameras, one on us and one on him, once we see what he's doing. And you can see when I'm at one point sitting in the chair, there's a look of jealousy, right? There's this look of like, how dare you be sitting... So that's an object that seems to be haunted for some reason, and this person got caught up in it. So I think you have both kinds of stories. Sometimes a spirit is using it to communicate or might be attached to it somehow. You know, in another case, something might be attached to it, and you're just caught up in the story.
The metal story made me think of finding coins, which I don't think is that they are haunted objects necessarily, but I have had a history my whole life of finding pennies, and on like a really important day, it's a dime or a quarter or something. And so I read that story, and 2 days in a row, I randomly found a dime yesterday and today.
Yeah.
And I've always thought of them as connection to my dad, that when I'm having a lot of stress in my life, and I am right now with moving a mother into assisted living, if you've never had to do that before, it's a lot. But dealing with all of her things and packing and moving, and there's so many things, that when I found the first dime, I thought of my dad, and I'm like, you know, I'm having stress. So today I'm walking my dog. He stops to sniff something. I look down, right by my foot is a dime. I've walked 2 miles and I happen to stop right there.
Right there.
You know, so when I heard the metal thing, I was like, that resonates with me.
You know, and I feel the same way about rocks and stones and things like that.
Not that that's necessarily a haunted rock, but it was put in your path
It's for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. It was the conduit to which this communication could take place.
Yes.
This message could be sent. Yeah. There's a story in the book about, you know, for lack of a better word, the AIDS rock, right?
Yes.
And my old roommate tells this story, and I talk to several of her friends, and they tell the story the exact same way. So it's either mass hysteria or it really happened, that they were all hanging out at, I can't remember whether it was an IHOP or a Bickford's, but it was someplace like that. They were in Texas. And it was kind of at the height of the AIDS scare. Not that that's gone away, but like when the news reports were everywhere.
Right.
And this was a group of, you know, fairly promiscuous people, right? And specifically this one group of girls, they were all like nervous about this. And they were at this place, I think it was an IHOP, and they just saw this extremely handsome guy. And whenever they described it, I always imagined it as a youth pastor, right? Like the youth pastor that wears the jeans and the jacket back in the 90s, you know, with the long hair.
Cool and guy.
For some reason, if you've watched Saved by the Bell, Mr. Belling's brother is coming to my head, if you've ever seen that episode.
Yes.
Right. And so he walks across, like very focused, walks across the parking lot. They don't see him. He just appears and starts walking across the parking lot, walks right directly up to my friend and puts a stone in her hand and says, "This will give you comfort," or, you know, something like that. And he walks away and he vanishes. They don't ever see him again. They don't see him leave the parking lot. They don't see him get into a car or anything. And that rock gave each girl comfort as she was going through these AIDS testing, right? And they would then pass it to the next person who was like, and it became this real focal point. And kind of after all these girls had gone through this really stressful time, the rock just disappeared.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, that's one of those things. Once again, like you were saying, like a message is put out there or something for comfort is put out there. It does its job. The object itself is the thing that's important. And then, whoop, it goes away when it's not needed anymore.
Right. And keep in mind, even though we're talking about haunted objects today, I do think that there are things like the rock that can bring you comfort. So just because we're saying haunted object doesn't mean it's going to terrorize you in the middle of the night. It could be something that brings you more of a comforting feeling.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a message from beyond, a lot of those stories are about that,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone wants to know of like, and then the walls started to bleed. And it was like, yeah, or the person was finally able to move on because they knew the person that they loved was happy. You know, like there are those as many stories about that have to do with a ghost story, which might not freak us out, but to me, a lot of times still give me goosebumps.
Now, I'm going to ask you one more question. Because maybe somebody's listening to this and they're like, but I've got that haunted object from my grandmother and I've got to get rid of it, but I don't know what to do with it. So like we were talking about the dolls in the cedar chest and there was one random doll in there that looked like a voodoo doll that my mom ain't into that. And so when we're like, but what about this doll? And my mom says, oh, I don't believe I've ever seen that doll before.
Yeah.
And it looked like it was probably, my guess might be her grandmother's, like maybe late 1800s. It was all leather, but it looked like a voodoo doll and looked like they had hand painted the face.
Right.
Like it looked like a little fur trapper doll, which is weird. So we threw it away. Should I have thrown it away? I have no idea. But I knew I didn't want it in my house.
Yeah, I mean, there is no hard and fast rule. The first thing I would say is if the doll wants to come back into your life, the doll will come back into your life. You know? So if you come home and all of a sudden, you know, you find it in the garage, it found its way back to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like I said, most of the time, these objects have a tendency just to kind of disappear or kind of vanish for your life and stop tormenting you. Yeah, you should have gotten rid of it. If you were getting the feeling from it,
yeah,
and
I did.
It was easy for you, 100%. Should you have just plain thrown it away? Well, guess what? The only one who will know the answer to that is you and your family if something happens to you.
I did talk to someone on another episode recently, and he's like, man, I wish you wouldn't have thrown it away. I would have liked you to send it to me.
Right.
So there are people who want haunted dolls. So if you have one, those people are easy to find.
So, and Tim was one of them, right? And I was hip on it, except for, you know, I'll leave people to read this story, but the story that involves the Amityville House and Butch DeFeo, Ronnie DeFeo, that was pretty much my tail end of bringing haunted objects into my house, or opening myself up to that. What happened when I started receiving these phantom phone calls, when this dark object started walking around my house and messing with my baby daughter, that pretty much was my tail end of like, I don't want these haunted objects in my house. And the best part is that Tim then went, even after reading my story and hearing all the details, and was still like, oh, I want them. I want them. I'll do it. Give them to me. So
awesome,
if
Tim.
You feel freaky, just let me know and I will give you Tim's address and you can send whatever you want to him.
Now, you have written some other books as well.
Yep.
And you and I were talking about coming back and doing some other episodes, but where can they find your books and information? Like this haunted object stories of ghosts on your shelf. I bought it on Amazon. You can do the same thing. Are all of your books on Amazon, or yep, where's the best place?
All my books are on Amazon. So, you know, I have a few, how-to manuals that I wrote back in the day about, investigating and taking ghostly pictures. I have some books on the Bridgewater Triangle, which is a really popular title. And then, of course, now living in Florida, I've written several books for the Haunted America series about places in Florida. And all of them can be found on Amazon.
And then you also have a podcast that you do.
I do. It's called Tripping on Legends, where it's basically I uncover the smaller ghost stories of like the out-of-the-way places in Florida. We look into kind of the history of the story, the history of the town, how those two things connect. And then we go out and try to experience the ghostly legend just the way people tell it. So experience over evidence. We don't try to investigate it or capture anything there. We just try to go and see what all of the hubbub is about and then report it back to the audience.
And you can listen pretty much wherever you listen to podcasts,
wherever
I'm going to guess.
Yep, it's on every platform.
Chris, I have loved this conversation today. This has been really fun.
I really appreciate you having me on. It's been a great talk.
And that wraps up our conversation about haunted objects with Christopher Balzano, who wrote Haunted Objects, Stories of Ghosts on Your Shelf with Tim Weisberg. You can purchase it or any of Christopher's books on Amazon or wherever books are sold. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.